So we can talk about what we could prototype and talk about what vocabulary and standards activities would support that. And we talk about what we should prototype and then figure out if it's the latter. Okay. Optimism rules. Okay. So let's see if we can get some notes going here. So one way we can put this, we were just discussing, was that we have a conceptual architecture here, which says that there's a reference model that we like to work towards that describes how and where to develop standards to support semantic operations in geospatial information. And one of those is to identify, develop, and link vocabularies. So there's one of our activities. And as a motivator for doing something in a finite amount of time, and also on a finite scale, to argue that whatever we come up with, we want to try to be able to demonstrate, to make a demo, to show some sort of feasibility of in some sort of forum. So that relationship suggests what we can work on. So I can go back to a couple of my slides, and then Todd can as far as vocabularies. But what I'd like to do is to first figure out which order we look at those in. I suggested, why don't we guess what we can prototype and then work backwards, but more optimistic, and the group said, no, let's imagine first and then crash down to reality second. So really the question then is, do we look at an overall model within which vocabulary activities are considered, or do we look at vocabularies as the sort of both microcosm and foundation of a reference model and go from there? Comment?
One of the things talked about is that vocabulary activities that you have in mind.
Yeah, so
describe the vocabulary.
Okay, yeah, so is this on? A vocab is a lightweight, sort of a unconference, non-conference conference, where it's very informal. It's kind of a hacker conference where people get together over a weekend and they have a need for a small vocabulary. Often it doesn't get fully developed over a weekend, but it's at least the start. I went to one after some tech the other year at Yahoo's campus, and it's a great networking opportunity. You really get to roll, but you don't get to do a lot at a lot of academic or industry conferences. So even if you don't come up with anything, they're still very useful. So Josh in 2006 or so had led the W3C GOSG incubator group trying to look at lightweight sort of neo-geographic models for linked data, and they had come up with one or two models, and then I guess a set of seven or eight other models that might be useful. Mm-hmm. And then the years ticked on, and last year after ISWIC, I helped sort of co-organize a Neo Geo VoCamp after they're having another VoCamp at the Library of Congress here in D.C. And so we started looking at, well, we know that Josh had and that group had done some work, so where can we take it to the next step? So again, it's hard to do this in a weekend, but I think identified three or four different models, at least, that we thought might be very simple and useful. And one was sort of a common feature definition to include geometry. Another was spatial relationships vocabulary. I think a third was a points of interest type, lightweight, medium level sort of gazetteer feature type model, which Christoph is the man to talk to on that. And then a fourth was sort of what to do with events and sort of spatial temporal information. You know, one of the things we know is that a lot of
people make that list again.
Oh, the four?
Yeah.
It was feature geometry definition and spatial relationships, points of interest or feature type, I guess, sort of.
Why?
Starter model. Yes.
Ah.
Yeah, I might want to put a slash there, sorry. I mean, actually, this gets into GeoSparkle, so I think some of these, I think the first two have been developed, from my understanding, like Dave talking about a little bit. Points of interest, Christoph has very many good ideas on this. And then events, you know, I'm really not sure. I know when I was doing my Think Data browser work, I actually had a timeline underneath the map and the browser component, and there was virtually nothing to browse. So that connection is not made. One of the issues, very lightweight, is just you'll see things like Tim Berners-Lee, and he has like a latitude-longitude properties hanging off his hip or something, you know. And, you know, what to do, just having a little better definition so we can separate these moving transient features from more stationary, static type of geographic features. So that would be useful. And there are a few very simple, there's a music ontology, event ontology actually, that I thought was actually very useful. It's just, and instead of doing sort of a meta reification of model for an event, it actually has it as events. You can have subtypes of events and things like that, and then it just associates, you can associate people and locations, and I think it borrows from some of Alpine predicates for time. No one's really using it. The W3C geo vocabulary actually has an event notion in it, mm-hmm. but I haven't seen any of that use. So it's really, in some sense, it's sort of up to the data providers. I mean, that was one of the things I wanted to.
Well, that's the question we can ask. Is
guys like,
you know, what is the next, assuming finite resources and effort, what's the next critical vocabulary to work on?
So then our big question, I think, in your geosemantics workshop at the OGC conference a few months ago at NOAA was, how does OGC play in? And I'm not sure we have the answer, but I'd really like to have that answer now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the feature geometry and relationship model should be done by OGC. It has repercussions on how geometry is queried in spatial databases and things like that. I think POI models.
Other people get to do this. I get to do this too.
Yeah, I like that. And some of the others, like the points of interest, events. I've noticed things too, like for my same places, I want to offer the data up. It's the community's data, so you have a Sparkle dump. There's lightweight vocabularies like void, vocabulary of interlinked data, where you can describe a RDF dump. So just having a nice extent, similar to probably what catalog service and other OGC vocabularies or services have defined, but this would be defined in vocabulary. So there's a few other complementary ones. I think those are sort of the core ones that we can at least start connecting data. And then,
well, let's make this a poll. I mean, let's have some other candidates and
For the model
voting on
yes.
what are the critical vocabularies that we don't have.
So everyone was here for the Sparkle talk, right? And heard, because I wasn't.
Give the microphone.
Real time inverted or
into RDF, or they're just taking vocabularies that are available somewhere. We make the conversion and then we post them somewhere. So are these dynamic changing?
Well, I mean, I guess the first two models, if they were to be agreed on, that people would just borrow from the OGC specs, then that's up to the OGC as far as how they evolve.
So, right. But have these vocabularies been incorporated into data sources, or there is a web page, for example, that is I don't know, querying the National Hurricane Center to get hurricane data in real time in RDF?
Definitely not.
So
not at a large scale. That's sort of the big question. That's why at Vocamp, I strategically targeted guys like Jens Lehmann from Link Geodata, who does the OpenStreetMap version, Glenn Hart and the guys at Ordnance Survey. These guys have huge data sets. And it's almost interoperability by default if we can get the large data sets. Jamie Taylor from Freebase was on the list. Right now, no. I would say arguably the only real link, at least in the linked data sense model, is the W3C geo that long vocabulary, which is actually pretty powerful.
Dave, maybe you can
have a little
say a couple words about
base up here.
GeoSparkle has deemed it important to represent each of the vocabularies in both RDFS and OWL.
Yeah, I mean, part of that is just that we want to we think that this is simple enough by itself that it could be used both with in the realm of the RDF, RDFS linked data community, and it should really work more or less just as well with those who are interested in doing full-on OWL reasoning. So I don't know if we've totally pinned down how to straddle that in terms of the ontology files that we deliver as part of the spec, but that's the general feeling that we've had so far, was that there's no reason that this shouldn't be applicable in both cases. I think that GeoSparkle being the first OGC thing that deals with semantic web is almost an odd place to start, because you have to have a way to express data before you need a way to query the data. And granted, they're
really like the cart, and we're looking around for horses to attach to it.
Right. I mean, ultimately, they're one and the same. These classes and properties that you're going to use to query the data are the ones that you're going to use to assert the data. In my opinion, it might have been nice if that was a sort of separate thing, but I'm not going to complain too heavily because we are actually making progress on it now. But the hope is that that little bit of ontology there of the geometries and the features will really be the base for what you were mentioning there before, for a nice, easy way to represent the geospatial part aspects of your data.
You have to understand, this is progress. You know, when they first brought this up, Javier Lopez insisted there was no vocabulary associated with GeoSparkle. So we've made progress.
So just, you know, as another sort of design tidbit, one of the design goals with the GeoXG vocabulary was to have instances that validated under an OWL ontology and also a GML application schema. So there's both for the same, you know, instances. And
that, the GRSS has the...
Yeah, and that reflects an ambivalence about what is the... You know, the fundamental encoding, basically it says, well, we're not sure there is one. But as a practical matter, so your feeling is that the methodology really involves trying to find some common ground in RDF and then going from there. Is that fair?
Well, yeah, I sort of started LinkedIn and then sort of migrate my way.
Mm-hmm.
Into NeoGeography and then into some of the OGC specs. But, I mean, there may be others that are thinking the other way. We had some debate about this at the Linked Spatial Temporal Data Workshop in Zurich. And,
yeah, do you have...
You stay with the well-known text instead of trying to come up with, like,
representation of geometry using LEF, right? Yeah, so this is what I think should be in bold letters somewhere on the homepage that everybody's forced to visit. So I think if we can come up in... Yeah. They are not represented in LEF in your case, right?
Right.
Perfect, yeah. But I think that when you read many of the new papers in the semantic web, then so it's hard to figure out for different communities where to stop. And stopping at LEF makes sense when you don't get any additional reasoning feedback out of that, right? And well-known text for the geometries is, I think, an excellent example where it can demonstrate what goes wrong, and you can read some papers that do that. When you try to define, like, say, polygons by having a part relation that connects LUT, which also has a second part connection to a long and stuff like that, and I'm not joking, it's all out there, right? So if you can come up with not only the methodology, but the methodology has, like, guidelines, that would be wonderful.
Yeah, the hope is really going to be the foundation for that sort of thing. We had some experience doing the spatial things in an all RDF sense. Oracle was coming at it from the other direction. They had a whole lot of stuff contained, wrapped up in one big literal. I think that the end result that we have is kind of halfway in between, and it really seems to work out well in a lot of ways, and hopefully if it doesn't work out, if people are aware of ways that it isn't ideal for querying, then we'll figure it out before we stamp it done.
That's the point I like.
So the idea there is that having a blob there that says special handling is more useful at this point than having, many little real data types connected by axioms that say this number isn't meaningful except with that other number. Since you have to have special software to deal with that anyways.
Even for things like spatial reference system, things like that, I mean, those are outside of the GML.
That's actually a current point of discussion within the working group. So if you have strong feelings on that point, please share them with me.
I mean, to me, I guess I am biased on RDF stuff, but to me, GML becomes geometry markup language. And all of the semantics has been in RDF. If you can do something useful with it, but I don't know. I also think, too, that just trial by error may go a long way, too, once we actually start implementing some of these systems. So, wow, that was a bad idea, or that worked really well, And my guess is your neighbor down the street will have the same issue, so we can kind of fix it, take a good best guess and go forward.
So what is it meant by implementation experience?
I'm sorry, what?
What do you mean by implementation experience?
A prototype.
Okay.
I think that would be just having the first implementations of this. Dave, do you know, is Javier going to have a GeoSparkle implementation on Oracle Spatial that we could use anytime?
I have no idea what their schedule is for adapting to whatever we produce here. I know that we, for BBN, changing the way Parliament represents the spatial things will probably not take a huge amount of time, but given that we're mostly services and not a product company, I expect that we will wait until it's done before we start moving to change to comply with it so that we're not chasing a moving target.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's You know, we are glad to know that, you know, the proposal of geospatial, you know, to make, you know, the implementation to support geospatial. But, in terms of, you know, on Wednesday to propose the standard, I say this is just sparkle our proposal. And on the other hand, could you share us a plan on validate this proposal before, you know, publish it for comments and also, you know, publish it as standard. You know, my point of view is that, in terms of OGC standards, many, standards are published before enough implementation, to prove that it is valid. So usually we see, you know, this is a theoretical proposal, comes with an endorsed standard such as 2.1.0, and then comes up followed by implementation to see, oh, I'm sorry, this is the limitations are here, limitations are there. Then there comes a revision to say, now this comes from a new version, it's a 3.0. So in terms of GeoSparkle, I'm wondering whether we could have some enough implementation or test that to verify the, you know, effective and to demonstrate the feasibility before pushing into the OGC thread to make it a, you know, a standard. You know what I mean?
Sure,
what,
sure.
Louise, what's the policy? Is it two implementations?
That's the current plan.
And have you discussed in the working group implementations?
We haven't talked too much about that yet. I mean, I know that both we plan to update our, like, even starting working group, Oracle had an implementation of something, and we had an implementation of something that was a bit different. So I know that both of us, with our vested interest in this, intend to merge to the common ground here. We haven't in the working group talked about the schedule of that yet.
So I'm not sure about the policy, but I know that there is, that in order to be a standard, you need some implementations of the standard. So those two are the ones you are talking about.
Yeah. No, I mean, so this isn't a purely pen and paper exercise, because both of us have both these systems, used them for query systems. We have ArcMap plugins that can interact with them and show you having GIS layers that are made up of semantic queries. So we do have a firm sense that we're in the right direction. I don't know if that feels like enough to you for going forward, but I don't have any, and I don't know what the OGC rules are either, but I feel reasonably confident that we're going to come up with something that is pretty decent, at least.
But maybe here there is an opportunity for this group to take what has happened in this working group and say, is this really working? Are we happy with the way the coordinates are being encoded? Can we provide another better way that, you know, other linked data groups are doing? So I think this building on this new SparkQL, making a demo and see if it works in maybe in another camp or so, I don't know. Maybe that's the way.
So the one thing that, you know, may be of interest is combining, you know, so there's been mainly, I think, GeoSparkle, you know, forming spatial queries, you know, filter query language equivalents using the GeoSparkle extensions, but maybe not a lot of experience combining that with other predicates in Sparkle. And thereby, you know, utilizing other vocabularies along with it. Because that's really would be of the most interest, is that now you can make queries that are, you know, very across mixed vocabularies.
Sure. I mean, I know that when Vivienne has approached this, and, you know, I'm coming more from the semantic web experience than geospatial experience, so we tend to
think of having an ontology for representing the domain to which you would attach these geospatial predicates. So I know that that's always in the way that we're thinking about it is, mm-hmm. you know, there are other things that have geospatial aspects that we want to query in this way. So we've combined it with air defense ontologies and that kind of thing in order to get useful results there. But I agree with you that that's really a key element for doing a demonstration here, because honestly, if you're only querying if you're only showing points and polygons on a map that are in a given set of points and polygons, then you're not getting a whole lot out of the fact that this is a semantic spatial store. You're just getting the same stuff that you get out of a spatial relational database.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if OWS 8, did that have a piece for GeoSparkle?
What?
Yeah, I get
incorporated because it was a work in progress, and sometimes it's risky to just take something that is in progress to have it as a technology to be used in WS8. But yeah, it can.
Yeah. And I guess I see the two communities. There's the OGC, which is heavily GIS, and then there's the Linked Data Web, which is.
Well, you know,
I'm not really sure.
There's the look aside and the pass through sort of models of query expansion. The look aside is, you know, you go into the knowledge base and you come back with additional terms for performing the standard query. The pass through may be that what you're doing is translating into GeoSparkle and running that query rather than, you know, just coming up with additional terms.
Yeah, I guess the thing I just want to highlight is if we can make the linked data community happy and the OGC happy, we hit a great sweet spot. Not sure how to do that, but.
I would just like to go once more back to the methodology section that is two steps back, if this is still allowed without hijacking the session. And just because we talked about ontologies here and linked data here, and I think what's unique in the combination of people in the room, that we have people from standardization, research, real data providers, and also industry. And therefore, I would love to spend like a couple of more minutes about talking about the methods. So what are these features that go into this ontology? And just to raise one interesting point is, for instance, to come up to this linked data stuff again, the URIs, right? How do we define meaningful URIs, and to what do we attach them? I really love the example brought up last time by Lynn saying that if this is about attaching URIs to raw data, we'll end up attaching URIs to pixels in satellite images.
Is names, you know, names is the smallest URI. A name can be an URI too. I think that's the most granular thing. Level of abstraction stuff there, I think. That's what, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I guess it's a question of what you
could repeat
mean.
That.
Do you want to
louder?
Yeah. Oh, at least you're saying that the granularity is sort of at the name level. You know, you would stop there. I guess the question is what is it that you want to name? If it's a pixel or you stop it, a place or something. I mean, there's even a question I think in GeoSparkle will have dereferenceable geometry URIs. Is that correct? It's not an airy type blank node or something here. Okay. I think that's an interesting piece, too. I mean, it could help with some of the conflation issues. You know, if people are sharing common geometries and saying, hey, this geometry is contained in this polygon right here.
Yeah, I mean, so the spec won't spell out whether you make your geometries, whether you have to name your geometries in any given data set. But there's nothing that, in some sense, that all of that stuff is going to continue to live in the RDF land. So, you know, you can name a geometry and talk about it in other places. You can use a blank node. It should all work the same way that those same decisions would in any other RDF data set.
But that, I mean, that does sort of speak to my confusion when I was listening to some of these talks and hearing about LOD, and I thought, finally, we're dealing with level of detail. Of course, I was wrong. But, we have mechanisms for doing the naming. We hope by using these hierarchical naming conventions that we have, you know, an extensible granularity. But that doesn't deal with the, you know, issue of characteristic scale and level of detail. Especially when, you know, the use of the URI and RDF is to be opaque. So, you know, how do we, or do we leverage the additional content of these naming schemes or not? Is there a danger there?
Probably will work in some communities and not in others, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, as you get into these details, I think there are still tons of open questions about the best practices of naming these bits of data, and we're really not going to have a strong answer to them until that data is being used in a meaningful way. And it's great that USGS is putting their data out there in this form now, because that's the first step. I mean, in my role, we can go different places and build prototype systems and demonstrate until our heart's content how awesome these systems are. But we can't make people produce their data in this form or release this data in the form. So as that starts to happen, then we can maybe iron out some of these details about...
So I would love your argumentation, and I would love to agree, and to a huge degree I agree, but the reason why I'm coming back to this guidelines and stuff like that again is that I think that, you know, when you look at Triplify and all these tools that can create RDF data out of your database, then it hopefully becomes clear that this is not where semantics come from, right? So just saying that, oh, let's wait until the people create RDF data, this may be then too late. They will create something, right? They will take the context out of the data, push raw data somewhere, name it somehow, do like RDF representations of polygons, weird stuff, and then there will be a big, like, this spaghetti throwing at the wall. So if we can say that we can provide people who want to publish their data with some best practice, and we are not saying this will be the best practice forever, but this is the best practice for today, this would be very helpful.
Yeah, I didn't want to construe the things that I just said in a way that disagrees with that, because I do agree with that. I mean, there are a lot of things that we know that we'd like to do already, and so writing those down would, of course, be a very good thing. And then there are other questions that I think about.
So we haven't really gotten past meta vocabularies, have we?
Do you ever?
Where are we at on the list, Josh?
So as part of being an OGC standard, you need to create all the documentation of, you know, what are the details, et cetera. But have you discussed in the working group maybe pilot, interpretive experiment, et cetera, how to move forward and test it in other environments? Because then that will be like the next step, and then you will get like best practices of how to incorporate that, I don't know, in gazetteers or...
So we have this idea that will facilitate the construction of standard vocabularies if we have policies and procedures or best practices for doing that. Do we feel we know what those are yet? Or do we need to step even farther back and say, how do we figure out what those are? Or is it the formation of vocabularies that's the only way we'll find out?
I mean, there's certainly a set of things, of best practices, that we know amongst this group based on like the joint experience of what we've already implemented. I mean, surely that's something that we've gained from doing the prototypes and demos and like small system implementations that we have done. So how we turn that into how we change that from a set of thoughts in people's heads and the way they do business into a concrete set of recommendations is, I'm sure you have the answer to that question, right?
No, I don't. So, you know, the sort of question I was going to ask and, you know, trying to explore that experience, the place where many ontologists start is what sort of logic are you going to use? And, you know, the way that, you know, the sort of Volcamp approach is, you know, what are your favorite words? We'll start from there. What are your favorite short old words? No. So I guess that's kind of a fundamental question here is there some, I guess I could call it top down in a way of starting from how do you want to be able to use the vocabulary in terms of decidability, or is the most important initial thing resonance with the community? That's a question.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking for people. So I tend to live in the bottom-up world, which isn't to say that what I'd like to see is everyone just turn a straight dump of their CSV files into RDF files that have columns and rows in RDF, because that's, you know, if we start with a clean but simple RDF model, then you can certainly build from there to models that are more expressive. And I know that there are people who totally disagree with that, so it may be that we can talk about two distinct approaches to this particular problem.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, Dave. I mean, I think that we should not try to build the one-all be-all, right? I mean, I think the minimal sort of policy. It's like, it's simple enough to where some guy who doesn't know anything about geography can come over in a day, look at a page or two, go through a little tutorial, a couple hours, have a mashup going, and that sinks in. For more expressive means, say something that an intelligence agency needs or something like that, well then just define another vocabulary, you know, and if it extends it, great. If not, that's great too. I mean, things only need to link when they need to link. And I think they will link when there is a need, so.
So if we think of this really as a process of extraction from a domain and all the vocabulary in it, what piece can we begin to extract which is minimal, clean, and is capable of being analyzed for, logical decidability or commonality with upper ontologies or something like that, whereas the mass conversion to RDF can make that follow-on very difficult. Is that fair?
The other thing, I think, in the linked data world, we saw at GI Science, Craig Milbach from USC ISI gave a talk on model alignment from extensional semantics versus intentional. So they were basically saying, hey, look, this is what your ontology really needs, based on how it was applied in the wild. So you have all these axioms up in the vocabulary, but that's not what it means. It's, you know, people are applying it in different ways. I mean, there's sort of migration of, like, self name as a way to name all kinds of things. I would have thought, well, it's just for naming people. I guess there's not a domain constraint or something on it, but it sort of evolved into this way to name things. And so if we do start with something minimal, and then, you know, try and just let it happen, you know. I mean, I'm not sure that's a great answer, though, either. I mean, you don't want the semantics to stray too far. These are issues of same as and things like this. But I think it's how you look at the picture. if you're theoretical and you look at it from the reasoning level, you're like, oh my gosh, this is never going to work. I try not to have that much pain in my life, so I I look at it from the other way. I go, well, we've had, what, data tagging?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I can get a little more semantics. It's getting me in that general direction. And then there will be tools that will take their knowledge of these different domains and data sets and say, oh, this, when you see that, that's what this really means. And that, I think there's business value to be had in those types of services, too. So,
so there's definitely some guidelines in there to, you know, in this, you know, to maybe put it on some theoretical basis that's consonant with something like, you know, John Sowa micro theory approach. That, you know, only so big a theory that you can get before you're lost trying to keep the commitment and the consistency. What? Plus two, okay. Laura?
I had a quick question. There was something about semantic signatures that you presented wouldn't developing such concepts as standards for part of a particular ontology domain help. And that looked more like a standardized piece of, you know, model. I mean, that's something that can be standardized at a certain detail level. Isn't that something that a standard group should look into?
Yes, so that was the point that I was trying to make. So I'm a big fan of minimalistic approaches, and I'm not going to do any other top-down ontology in my life, I promise. I've gone this way for years, and I've seen too many of them. So I'm really a big fan of starting bottom-up, but therefore I think we need this pattern to help people constructing the things bottom-up and the signature to extract them. And I think this is where we can offer something in terms of the methodology, because just to turn around the point, sorry, if we really allow people to use friend of a friend's name to assign, to say that this is a chair, then no data mining will be powerful enough and no big cluster to get this mess apart again. So I'm just making fun of you. So I am not saying let's do ontologies for domains that we are not domain experts in, but let's explain people methodologies to understand ontologies, methodologies to create ontologies. Design patterns developed by Aldo and other guys have been extremely successful. We were also able to do one for the WCC working group, which involved 20 people, and doing something as a compromise of 20 people is pretty difficult. And I'm not saying that this signatures approach is the right one. This is just the one that we propose. And combined with this minimalistic set, the Bike theory, I think that this could be like a methodological contribution and let the other guys do the ontology as good as they have to. And maybe a right and false name for some people works for whatever kind of thing.
I sense
a I was just saying that you can at least get there from here now, before you can even get there from here. So, that was actually one of the questions was with the geomodels, would there be a toponym predicate or something like, or do you just reuse RDFS label or something?
Mm-hmm.
In any environment, just the bottom-up approach will have limitations because it's harder to define the scope of the domain. With a top-down and bottom-up approach, generally you have, you know, with the initial top-down approach, high level would give you overall scope of the environment, and a bottom-up approach at a later time would give you detailed concepts at a granular level. So meeting somewhere in between generally has a more effective handle on a large domain versus starting something bottom up or top down alone. It's something that enterprise architects have experimentally agreed as a couple of documents to show.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think a lot of said, well, let's meet in the middle. I actually am leaning towards, like, let's meet at the third. So it's bottom up, but then reuse some top down things like both person, both name, whatever. You should be able to go onto a web page and see a picture of the entire model. That's usually my judge on whether or not it's a simple, useful model. If I have to spend 5 days, which I don't have, to understand all the mechanics behind it. That's the other thing with these vocabularies is so I work on defense and intelligence contracts, like, we're making up our own vocabularies. I'm like, why? I would argue that the semantic web has already worked out what folk name and all that really means. Like, there are a whole entire list, threads of discussions on each term. Gossip, exact match, Al same as, like, that is becoming the semantics.
Right, but there are terms in there that's also, you know, close match, pretty good match. Kind of far from a really good match, you know.
But,
so
it's people coming together to discuss the definition. So
right. So how do you set up a methodology where you can efficiently see whether there is vocabulary to reuse or not? And that means both, oh, that looks like a term, and, you know, what did they really mean by this, and is that the same that I mean, and is reuse efficient or dangerous?
Maybe I'm just restating the obvious, but it seems to me like what we're talking about, and maybe what this slide and the one before it should be labeled, is lessons learned. A demo is great, but unless you bring something back to the community out of that demo that is, this is what we got out of it, bottom-up is the way to go, or bottom-up is not the way to go. In any case, I think out of each of these demos, and maybe some retrospective work would be good, is documenting if we can get an agreed-upon list of lessons learned, and maybe that's the hard part, is agreed-upon, that would be a great gift to deliver to people and to carry forward with.
Yeah, totally agree.
So another idea related to the bottom-up, et cetera, is maybe a practical approach where you start with 5 queries.
No, we can't have that.
Yeah, we need to have that. Because then even if you go in a bottom-up approach, what are you starting with? So having a set of queries then will guide what you need to convert first. For example, in the MMI project, we want to have a relationship between terms, and we find out that most of the terms can be expressed in a hierarchy without a lot of properties, attributes, and we just ask us. And we have all those best practices in the Marine Metadata Interoperability project. And we found that the relations of ESCOs were good enough. Then we found out, well, this is the pattern that we're using to create URIs. And we create then a tool that you can import CSV and put and create the URIs for you. But all based on the queries that we wanted to do, and they were simple queries. I want to find all the data that has sea surface temperature, but you call sea surface temperature in our way. We were not going into the details. Is this skin sea surface temperature, and is this skin sea surface temperature collected by satellite? No, we were doing small steps. So I will say a practical approach.
I would disagree, except that the entire interoperability experiment worked on one query the whole time. Yeah, and that was quite enough, really, to go on.
I'll only second that and say that in our experience, we've seen a lot of efforts like this where the first thing someone has tried to do, rather than decide what they want to ask their system, is sit down and like, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to attempt to comprehensively model the domain. And if that is how you start, then you probably are never going to finish, because there's always going to be some disagreement in the weeds. You're always going to think of more things to add to it. Like, well, there's this relationship between this thing. But if you never ask about that relationship, then what value did you get out of having it in your ontology? So I agree with you wholeheartedly.
And we should be able to extend fairly easily when we do need to. I mean, that's one of the, should be one of the beauties of RDF, the flat triple structure, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Did we figure it all out, Josh?
No, I don't have a reference model yet, so come on. I see empty places in a slide. So, it's interesting how we've really gone from pretty practical questions to pretty philosophical ones. I think this is always an attraction and a danger.
Well, I have a question for this group, if it's okay, that may veer back towards the practical.
Cool.
Here. And that is, for those of you who are in organizations that have data and would like to see more of the end value. Like, Lynn, USGS has just published all of this data, and that's great. So if we're trying to think about a demo for this, how, as a group, could we use these data sets that are now available, given these best practices that we just talked about, in order to go yet another step beyond what we've done before in showing the data usefulness.
Should we repeat that, because there actually are people listening on the phone?
This is just an idea. At least you should, for a particular domain, you should have a taxonomy done and have ontology from a bottom up, you know, taxonomy done in the top-down manner, because it's hierarchical, and ontology done from bottom up. At least that way, you know where your bottom up pieces of ontology fit into your whole hierarchy of your domain, and you're not repeating the same, and, you know, that's probably we should experiment a little bit.
So there's a note on the chat here saying, you know, overlap, dot, dot, dot equals redundancy. Is that better or worse for communication? And that speaks to some of that, you know, is overlap meaning you understand the same things, or is overlap you have symbolic confusion and semantic heterogeneity? And so answering that question may be critical to successful vocabularies. Any other thoughts in the last few minutes?
I have a question. I'm not a member of OGC currently, so what is the current thinking? I know that...
thinking?
As far as what OGC would take on as far as developing quote-unquote spatial intelligence.
Well, OGC just, you know, is a perfect mirror of its members' wishes. No, so that's one of the questions that I raised in the reference model is...
Here's why I asked, Josh.
Yeah.
With the vocabs online, it's, you know, Dave has done great work, and you guys on... you got a feature in geometry and spatial relationships vocabulary now that I think a lot of people link on to. So then, what else? You know, I mean, is it more within the geography domain, or is it more of a, hello, Link Data Web, nice to meet you.
Well, I think you should answer that, because I asked it first. But, yeah, I mean, this is the question posed by the reference model. You know, so there are some who say, I think underestimating the effort, why don't we just
produce, you know, every concept system from OGC in OWL. Just put it into OWL and, you know, throw it against the wall, and, you know, the linguine will stick and the shells will kind of fall off, but, you know, something will be edible. And the idea of the reference model is, well, there's got to be some reason, one, that that effort was too great for people to undertake, and two, the potential return was not evident enough to fund. And so we still have, you know, the greatest amount of OWL from these standards is what some of Piasecki's students did a few years ago and never updated. You know, and we have to ask, why is that situation existing? So that tends to tell me that we need to be more focused in the effort to ontologize OGC. Meaning, and I think, you know, GeoSparkle is very an interesting nexus because, you know, we always want to ask questions and look for stuff. And so, I mean, one reference model may just be examine the ripples that come out from that. But the problem with that is that, you know, and with all due respect, I'm not sure what the profile of GeoSparkle is what it needs to be within OGC as a whole. And so maybe that's the role of the demonstration. So not only do we get best vocabulary practices, but we get a reference model out of trying to apply that in a demonstration in whichever form and form, whether it's OWS8, AIP4, SOCOP demo, or all of the above together, that, you know, somehow we leverage trying that out.
Well, I guess this is what one of my concerns is that there's a lot of things that GIS people are interested in that, you know, the maybe Linked Data Web or NeoGeography Web wouldn't be as interested in, more advanced spatial operations, set unions, whatever. I mean, it's, you know, will GeoSparkle become much more expressive and deeper, or will it remain something like right now? I think it's a beautiful, from what I understand from a map that sent me, it's beautifully architected from a linked data perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it's going to allow a lot of different connections out on the linked data web. Now, if that's from a putting the GIS hat on, like you said, maybe that's probably not the case just yet. But, I don't know who should have a say on that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in some sense, if linked data web says, oh, this is great, then, but only members of OGC can vote on things, then.
Well, okay, so that's, I think I've influenced OGC standards for a number of years, and I've never been a voting member. So that shouldn't, nobody should let that stop them, because there is member consensus and then there is community consensus. And, you know, there are certainly many people involved in OGC who value the community consensus. So don't let that stop you. But
I guess in some sense, if it ever would go that way, you come up with a new model. I mean, I think it'll evolve. So, and I'll just tell my note, Josh Lieberman. So
that would be about the best possible problem to have with GeoSparkle, is that the community uptake was so great that, you know, there was just this wide body of use of it that we might have to adapt slightly to.
Mm-hmm. So this is, I think, the general framework of, you know, how do we get the reference model, is we've answered the question a couple of times, you know, what is a vital application? So semantic mediation is one vital application. Producing and working with linked data is another, apparently, at least fashionable, if not vital, application. And so maybe that the question to ask is, what's the third? What's the next one that we can construct this reference model out of?
There may be one interesting thing going to the discussion between you both and also the application question is, so one of the of the capstones of the semantic web is not only ontologies and linked data, that is the data model in RDF, but also reasoning, right? And I would be interested to know maybe from you guys, what are the reasoning services offered by the semantic web that are interesting for geoscientists? And I never got a good answer for that question, which probably also tells you a bit about the story about what reasoning services are offered right now on the semantic web.
Yeah. So tie into that, and maybe hopefully this will be phrased as an answer to your question there. But there's a really simple use case for doing GIS work with some level of reasoning, where you can bring up layers of data where that first level of linkage between important things to you has been done by the computer and not in the head of the GIS analyst or person who's doing it. So, you know, find me all of the particular towers that have these capabilities, rather than just looking at a layer and trying to sort that stuff out on your own. And that's low-hanging fruit as far as this stuff goes.
I think the reasoning, semantic reasoning, is derived out of the relationships and properties that you have within your ontologies. Once you have your ontology developed in your queries or in your your semantic web, it uses the relationships and the properties to develop that reasoning. Reasoning is based on that, and ontology should provide that if you have a mutual ontology developed. So that's conceptually what reasoning is.
Sure, right.
Develop the reasoning. Do you agree?
I'm not sure whether I agree, but maybe that's not the most important thing. What is especially interesting to me, so just to give you the perspective to my question, for instance, so the OGC web is living its own world, and the services in the semantic web are living its own world, right? They're not connected. And for this reason, for instance, we developed this program of the web processing service, which looks for the SDI people like web processing service, so they can chain it as they're used to, and in fact, it's palette or whatever semantic web reasoners. And now we are wondering what other kind of services, components, implemented software reasoners on the semantic web are interesting for people working on geospatial ontologies, people working on spatial data infrastructure and stuff like that. Because one of the, as all this, if you look back to Tim Berners-Lee's visions about the semantic web, it was to have the possibility to reason, right? So that was part of the core motivation. And I'm just wondering, what role does reasoning play in this work right now, in contrast to like just in creating RDF data, for instance?
Okay, so I've been reminded that it's time to puncture our balloon, float gently back to Earth, and come up with a couple actions out of our discussion, and return to wrap things up. So I've sensed that, you know, there was a desire to test things like the methodology and the applications and several opportunities to do so, and some coordination between these three opportunities might be good. What other actions do you think we have?
I guess I'm wondering, is this something that's so complicated to develop, gather, either lessons learned or best practices, or both?
Is fair. So that's one, you know, potential soak up activity is, you know, hold the boot camp, go to the soak up page to see what's recommended to how to act and what to end up with, and having a, you know, vocabulary event or activity. Something else?
finding a clever way to use the published data with tools that we've already built to show off, so to speak. Sorry, repeat that again. How about we use the data that USGS and others have published recently with tools that have already been built to continue to show off and add further value?
Okay.
In what form? Hopefully in the form of something that people can actually try out.
I mean, are these mini demos or?
Yeah, I mean, I know that I said probably this exact same thing last year, but I'm going to say it again anyway. And that is, if we, you know, USGS has now put up their end of the bargain and have a persistent service on the web, those things. So if we take that a step farther and have a persistent service that does something cool with it that's also on the web, that would be very compelling.
Okay. To create and publish derivative services. And so on SimWeb Central, right?
This is something that could potentially factor into the interop stuff that we were talking about earlier.
Okay.
I mean, it's certainly extremely useful to catalog existing ontologies, but working some of the best practice stuff into that as well might be excellent.
All right. Any last thoughts? So we'll put these notes up on the web, and I think that was a really interesting discussion. I thank everybody for participating. Turn it over to you.